Geek Tank is supported by listeners like you.
Get your Uru hammers and your Kneeler guns, a sonic screwdriver or a sword plus one. Use Valerian steel if it'll get you to come to the Geek Tank, to the Geek Tank, to the Geek Tank. The Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
Hi, I'm Guy.
Hi, I'm Troy.
Hi, I'm Chelsea.
And this is Geek Tank Season 4.
Your dice bag-sized podcast.
Is that a D20 in your pocket, or are you just lucky to see me?
Today we're going to talk about superstition. But first, the news. Geek Tank is sponsored in part by Geek Way Homes. There's only one way to buy a home, and that's the Geek Way. Okay, well, maybe not. Also, Vision Comics and Oddities is having a 50% off sale on everything through Halloween. Go see them. They're at 3958 South Federal Boulevard in Sheridan, just south of Hamden. And they've got all kinds of cool stuff. In the news, the 8th book of the Expanse series, Tiamat's Wrath, has been pushed back from December to March 26th of 2019. It's the first time that an Expanse book has been moved. And NASA lost its first astronaut candidate this week when Rob Coolin resigned from the Corps. He cited personal reasons for doing so. He's the first astronaut to resign in 50 years.
I was going to say, that's very surprising.
Yeah, it's very rare.
If they lost him, he's probably in the last place they last saw him.
Yeah, maybe like where they left their keys.
Right.
Lost and found.
He's in the couch cushions.
He'll be fine.
Right. And speaking of NASA, the OSIRIS-REx probe will begin its rendezvous with a potentially hazardous asteroid Bennu this week, which will collect samples and return to Earth. The rendezvous takes a very long time, though. It's expected to actually connect in 2020.
Oh, cool. So coming out Friday, September 7th, is a movie called Peppermint.
Peppermint.
Which you love that kind of coffee, don't you? Peppermint.
I do. I love that in my coffee.
All right. So it's an action film starring Jennifer Garner from Alias.
Oh, yeah.
From other things.
That's her alias, isn't it?
It is her alias. Yeah. And it's directed by Pierre Morel, who directed District B-13, which at one time I had like 3 copies of that I kept giving to people because it was like
$2.
Oh, my God. $2. It's a really fun movie. It's full of parkour, martial arts and
parkour.
Stuff.
Parkour.
He also directed Taken.
Okay.
So he has a very particular set of directorial skills.
I'm assuming you're taken with him.
Yes, and he directed The Transporter, which was a fun, silly action film with Jason Statham.
Super fun.
So Peppermint, dramatic voice, first time this season. Peppermint is a revenge story centering on a young mother who finds herself with nothing to lose and is now going to take from her enemies the very life they stole from her. Rated R for action drama thriller. So yeah, I will end up seeing this maybe at the Dollar Theater. I don't know, but I'll see it. It sounds like my kind of film.
Mm-hmm. So the Spyro Reignited trilogy was supposed to be out this month on the 21st. It has been pushed back, but it sounds like for good reasons. It's only been pushed back about 2 months. The official release date now is November 13th. They just want to focus a little more and tweak it to be at that high standard that they've set for themselves and for the fans. So I am really hoping that it's a good use of their time. It doesn't seem like a lot of time. Like 2 months in development hell is a lot of like crunch, 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 crunch. So hopefully it's enough time that they need to get this done and out. Because I'm really, really excited.
Maybe they just got jealous of the Expanse getting pushed back and
they just decided it was a trend.
Right.
It's a trend.
It's what the cool kids do.
Well, and that's the news. So welcome back to season 4.
Oh my
and
God.
Welcome back.
It's season 4.
They've never even been there.
Welcome back to season 4.
Welcome back. Because
I don't know why you left season 4.
And then came back.
And then you came back. So
So season 4 is actually the good one. The first 3 were prequels and they all sucked.
Yeah, that's true.
So what? 4, 5, and 6 are going to be the best.
Well, and actually the truth is we did season 4 first.
Yes.
And then we went back and redid seasons 1, 2, and 3.
later.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about that.
So this this is actually the first season.
I mean, behind.
But we're going to tell everybody later that this was the fourth season.
Right.
Right.
So season four. Okay, so we're going to talk today about superstitions, because we've got some interesting stuff that we had a question, which was, if superstitious rituals in gaming worked, would that be cheating?
Yeah.
But first, let's discuss...
the news. Oh, wait, we already did that.
We did that. Let's discuss, what is superstition? Troy?
Okay.
I'm looking at you. Pointedly.
So we're going to use the definition that best applies to our topic today, which is, superstition is a widely held but unjustified belief in supernatural causation leading to certain consequences of an action or event or a practice based on such a belief. So licking your dice because it makes them roll better.
Yeah.
I do that all the time. I like
which
your
means
dice.
Which that, like, Troy, you're the most practical of us.
I am.
Do you have any superstitions?
I do not practice any superstitions at all.
Have you ever?
Not with superstitious results. The closest thing I come to would be being prepared, with the slight belief that if I'm not prepared, it invites the situation to actually happen.
Okay.
So, instance, hey, are you going to take your knife with you today? Well, if I don't take my knife with me today, there's going to be a package I have to open, and I won't have my knife with me. But if I have my knife with me, that package situation won't happen because I'm prepared.
So he tries to open his package with his knife.
It's someone else's package.
That got weird. Like, oh, God.
That's what Guy was imagining. But I know that there's no real causation effect with it, more than if I'm not prepared, then when that situation happens, it's going to be way more noticeable to me.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
How about Guy? You superstitious?
So I'm slightly superstitious. I train my dice when I play RPGs specifically.
You like rub their faces and
no,
hear them
I just
when they
like
pee
to
the
have
carpet?
Them. Yes, I whenever they do things bad, I rub their faces in the bad role. No, I like to turn them so that the desired number is up. So, for example, if it's 20-siders and I want them to roll 20s, I'll have them sit with the 20s up. So that you know, it's kind of a thing. I was much more superstitious as a kid than I am now.
Okay.
And I don't really think I'm superstitious now so much as I feel like that's just part of the tradition of role-playing for me.
So what were some of your superstitions at one point that you've kind of, like, given up?
Yeah, when I was younger, I didn't like people touching my dice. I did all of those kind of things.
The classics, yeah.
I had specific dice for specific games.
Okay.
They were color-coded for games and stuff like that. But now I do have my dice for Star Trek, but they're dice that were released for that game, so that makes some sense.
So they roll better for that game.
Yes. They don't. Those 20s will not roll for any other game. They just stop.
Because they're all D20s and some D6s when you need them.
The D6s are actually specialized, although I think they would work for Fate.
Yeah.
But I think that's about it. Because they've got the same pattern on them. But yeah, those D6s won't roll for anything else because they're weird,
right?
Weird sixes. So let's go with you, Chelsea. How about you?
I'm super superstitious.
Super superstitious?
I didn't think I was that bad. I honestly didn't. And then we started talking about it. And I was like, I'm so superstitious.
I think, in fact, your exact words were, I'm bleeping superstitious.
Yes.
But you didn't say bleeping. I just went ahead and censored it.
I mean, I have a necklace that I wear every single day. And I have, since I bought it, I have a coin stamp necklace of Yggdrasil. And there's a
which she's actually right now messing with.
Well, like, my mom had one for the longest time that she got at Ren Faire, and I got the same one because I loved it so much, and I would wear it. And she's like, why don't you just get your own? You're an adult now. And I was like, yeah. And then I got it, and I wear it all the time.
So what's superstitious about it, though?
I don't know. I feel like on days where I'm having some bad luck, if I flip it, things will get better. It's usually on the Tree of Life side, but if I'm having a really bad day, it will pop to the Pentacle.
You should call it the script. So then when things are bad, you can flip the script.
When I lay my dice down, every time I do, I always lay the entire set out usually. So, like, usually for a role-playing game, for a tabletop, standard D&D, Pathfinder, I will put the D20 in the center and the rest of my dice will encircle it.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter, like, what number is up usually. If it's a one, I'll always flip it usually, now that I think about it.
It's like a little ritual where all the other dice are worshiping the dice in the center.
Yeah, they kind of protect
it. It's a witch circle.
They keep
it's a coven.
Which one? It's a coven.
So.
Which one?
The coven one.
That one.
I don't like to waste rolls, so I will not roll anything until I'm absolutely required to. Like,
so you have a belief that each roll is its own like resource, and you are using them up when you roll them?
Right, and I'll have people, like, if they tell me to roll something and they're like, oops, no, you didn't need to roll that, I will keep, like, there is a table rule when I play that they will keep that roll, which is really nice. There are some games where you have to roll a lot, like Pathfinder makes you roll a lot. But like Dustin, when we're playing our Star Trek game, we don't roll very often, so those rolls are very critical when they come up.
Yeah.
So I just kind of save my energy and like don't even touch my dice until I need to roll them. I don't blow on my dice. I honestly, like, some people blow on their dice and like cradle them for a certain amount of seconds before they roll them on the table, and they have to like touch them after a certain amount of time. Like,
again,
I don't
dice.
Really need to do that, but. Oh, God.
So I've got a friend who I learned a lot about really good strategy and statistics with for a game called Heroescape.
Uh-huh.
And he has these opaque containers that he puts his dice in rows, mm-hmm. so that way you can't see what it is. And he does this for expediency time because games are timed in a tournament.
Right.
And so in order to make sure that the game finishes and doesn't go to time, he gets his rows ahead of time. You make your row, then he'll reveal what his row was because you're doing competitive competition rows. You're trying to get a better row than the person that you're against.
Okay.
And so he'll just do it to get it ready. So then when you do yours, just to make it faster. There's nothing superstitious about it.
That makes me kind of suspicious because I personally like when DMs show their roles.
Oh, well, he shows it once the time is correct.
Oh.
So like, if I need to roll more shields than you roll attacks on me to defend, mm-hmm. I'll roll the dice, and then I'm not going to show you how many shields I rolled, though, until you roll your attack dice, and then I'll show you.
Okay.
But he also taught me a great thing, which is I asked him, what's the number one mistake you see people making? And this is related to superstition. Mm-hmm. Is they'll be doing statistically the correct move. It will fail for them, and then they will change their next move to a statistically lesser move because they feel the one that they were doing failed them.
Isn't working. Okay. People are rolling their dice.
It's kind of related to gambler's fallacy.
Yeah.
Gambler's fallacy.
Where you think if a certain number of times something happens, then it will happen less after.
Okay.
Or if it happens less, then it's going to happen, like flipping the coin.
Right. Right. So like if I'm having trouble with dice, I will usually swap them. Because I just get tired. Some people will, like, banish them to a special bag with, like, a lucky charm. Just like, oh, please.
Or the garbage.
Or, like, melting dice, or hammering them.
Which
sounds, like, horrible. I've never been that mad at my
dice. That's a great name for a combination ice cream shop game shop.
Melting dice.
There was a guy that I used to play in Magic tournaments with who wouldn't let me cut the deck because I was a woman and he was afraid I'd ruin them.
Wow.
That was
so many things wrong with that.
I know.
I can't even start with that.
I always just had a judge cut the deck whenever I would play with him because that was the only contention he had about it. Like, I mean, I was the only gal at games, but it was like ridiculous.
Well, if you feel that way, mm-hmm. there are more things
underneath.
You're going to
get girl cooties on my deck.
Yeah, if you're getting girl cooties on my deck, then you've probably got deeper problems.
Again, we said deck.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's issues.
Well, yeah, like, there are people, like, I don't like it when people touch cards when I'm dealing. Like, for, like, Munchkin.
Oh, picking up their deck too soon?
Yeah, if you pick up your deck too soon, I'm like, I'm trying to count, first of all, and second of all, you don't have all your cards. Like, I don't touch all my cards until I have all of them. It's just a thing, like... And that's why I get pissed off when people are like, oh, I'm going to deal you one more card, and they deal one card, and then they deal two. I'm like, I've ruined it.
You've messed with everything.
Everything is awful.
You do have a lot of superstitions.
I do, and I didn't think I was that bad. I do keep color-coded dice
until
as well.
Until us. Once again, we have ruined
You've
Chelsea.
Ruined everything, yeah.
Now, our friend Alex has a very, very strict no-touch-my-dice rules, and he also has a, I don't know if he still does this, but he used to have a cleansing rule of where he would put his dice in his mouth.
But then
you would go wash them off in water.
That's not sanitary.
That's not sanitary.
But
it's like peeing on your dice.
That's like you want to.
I cleanse my dice by peeing on them.
At least he knows where his dice has been.
If he ever commits murder, it's going to be really easy to get his DNA.
Well, he washes them off afterwards.
Like, just why then? Why?
Just not. Don't use a UV light.
You're asking for logic with superstition.
That's weird.
Don't use a UV light on his dice.
That's a little too far for me.
Yeah.
That's a little too much.
It's not like he has to eat them and pass them.
I know.
And then use them.
But like, I don't
Okay, I'm horrified by just that image. I mean, just that image alone. Thank you, like, so very
welcome.
Much for
that. It just reminds me, like, when I buy dice, I will roll them to see if they roll well, because I bought a set of dice that consistently they roll threes.
Got to take them out for a roll.
That way, yeah. So I don't use those dice for anything because they're not fair dice.
Okay, so we talk about like things like gravity dice, which are specifically, gravity dice is a local dice manufacturer here. I think they're out of Utah, and they make dice out of aircraft aluminum, and they drill the holes so that they're six siders, and they'll drill the pips so that they are weighted. So they'll take six times as much weight out of the one as they do the sixes on the other side, so that they will be weighted exactly right.
Because they should be weighted perfectly.
Yep. Yeah. So you assume that all of the gravity dice are perfectly weighted. I have a set of gravity dice, and I still train them.
But that's just using science to lessen the odds of misprinted dice or tumbled dice. Game science makes some really great
dice,
too.
Does the same thing for the exact
same way. I'm guessing since those are airplane metal, though, they're not cheap, whereas game science dice
are
between $1 to
$5. They are wonderful.
I know.
Wonderful.
So the thing I read, though, that was interesting is the statistics are changed so slightly that it's not that big of a deal.
Really?
But
it's such a slight change that you're going to have to roll that dice a ridiculous number of times for that to really make a difference, unless if you're using really bad dice that are horribly weighted.
It could happen.
See, mine just happened to be really horribly weighted, and I was talking to, like, Becca of Lair of Abraxas about it, and she specifically rolls all the dice that they get in to make sure that their dice that they're ordering are random, because they want it to be random for their people. They don't want them to get bad dice. And, like, when you manufacture in large, large quantities, like certain companies, there's going to be bad dice.
Okay, so the question we've got is, if these rituals had actually worked,
licking your dice,
whatever, and
not,
they started
not,
testing,
not the science ones,
no,
right?
But let's say they actually altered and changed the nature of the game. Then the question is, would that be cheating? So let's go to a break and then come back and discuss that.
Hi, I'm Terry Farrell from Becker, Deep Space Nine, all kinds of fun stuff. And you're watching Geek Tank.
And we are back. We are talking about superstition rituals for dice.
Woo.
And the question is, if they worked, is that illegal? Should it be allowed?
Yeah. Would that be cheating?
Like, the obvious contention is magic, right? Because magic is a big tournament-based game. So people who, like, always put, you know, their special cards and special sleeves and...
I've got magic sleeves that are,
their favorite mats, right? Their lucky table mats. And, like, they have their lucky...
Well, being a fairly experienced magic player, I can tell you that luck is not as big of a factor in magic as it is in other games.
As it is tactics.
Right.
Unless if it's like the luck of doing a sealed booster draft and getting lucky cards. But even then, if you get unlucky cards, if you're a really good player, you can still craft an effective deck and beat a worse player who has a better deck that makes bad decisions.
Right.
Yeah.
So
magic has a good amount of decision-making tactics goes into
it. If you know the game really well, you can actually use a worse deck to beat a better deck against a lesser player. But there are definitely people who apply superstition to it. Like, I have to use my lucky 20-sider for my life counter.
Right.
And so that could work that way.
Well, and I think that a lot of people apply their bad tactics to luck.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I have bad tactics.
I just didn't get the card I wanted.
Right.
Or I just didn't get the lands that I needed to put out this one card when you could have put out, like, 15 other cards and won the game.
Which, if they would have used better statistics in building their deck, they could have weighted it better. It's like, it wasn't bad luck you didn't get land. The problem is you had, like, one-third of your deck, or, like, one-fifth of your deck was land as opposed to one-third.
Yeah.
But when the money's involved, yeah, cheating's definitely a bad thing.
Right.
Right.
Because you just ramp up money and win tournaments and get better cards and just...
Now, have you heard of the term cooler? There's actually a movie made about this.
No.
Cooler is a concept of that casinos that believed people who actually were being lucky, they would hire people that they thought had an aura of bad luck. Or they would cool the luck down. And this is ones who believed in this. And so if someone was running really well, they'd send a cooler to go stand by them.
Uh-huh.
Macy was the name of that actor, the guy who played in...
William H. Macy.
He was the actor that played in it. He played the Cooler, the guy with bad luck.
Huh.
And I think it's called The Cooler is the name of the movie.
I mean, there are some people who are like forever unfortunate in life, right?
But that still,
so if luck was a proven factor, this is what you would see in response to that. You would have,
I would so want to Mythbusters that. I would. I mean, just the thought process.
Well,
of,
obviously,
you're a cooler, huh?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Troy rolls a die,
but
and then we're going to roll 20s and see how many times he rolls a 20 and then stick a cooler next to it. Yeah.
But see, that it wouldn't work, obviously, because we know that luck doesn't work. So
right.
In order for unluckiness to work, you'd have to have luck work.
There are like habits too that.
Well,
magic
you and I think that, but it's still
consider lucky, right? That will make them win, like their lucky life counter, like their mats, like mm-hmm. touching their mats specifically. People will like not allow any like anything on their mats, otherwise they believe it's unlucky. Like people won't know that the people touch their cards without their permissions unless it's unlucky, like that kind of thing. Like,
yeah, and I touch your mat, have I ruined your luck?
Yeah,
and you're
exactly.
You know,
that's what made you lose.
That's what made I touched
well, or
your
like
mat.
People will do the it's like the fortune cookie thing where you trade booster packs. Like I pick the booster pack I want and I give it to somebody else and have them give me one and that increases my odds of getting a better pack.
Okay.
I've had that happen at booster
I've
packs.
I've usually picked booster packs. Originally I picked them based off of the picture because of aesthetics.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
I is want, it pretty?
It's pretty. I like and then it. I found out booster boxes
mm-hmm.
are not random.
Really?
Right.
There's actually a science to
There's
how
a science
they are.
To them.
So you don't. If you were a store and you bought a booster box,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to let people just pick the decks out that they want because then they could do that. But you'd mix it up.
Yep.
But then also as a person buying a deck, you don't want to buy a deck from an unopened box because someone could have gone through and picked all the good stuff out. It's
right.
it's such
having
a mess.
Now built a card game.
Right?
I can tell you that it's absolutely not random.
That
it's
sucks not. Because it should be random in that case.
It can't be.
It's random-ish, but you're going to get the same number of rares and ultra-rares on the same level in that box.
They can't make it random because of the nature of the way cards are made. So you end up with 18 cards per sheet of master sheet when they're printed,
mm-hmm.
and they're cut up, and they're put in. So what they do is... they randomly decide what's on an 18-card sheet and then cut them into a foil so that you have an 18-card booster. And then what they do is they just make 200 of these 18-card boosters. But number 126 of all of those boosters is the same number of cards.
Yeah.
And it'll always be that way.
So it's this is a little off topic, but
same
we'll
type
back
of cards.
On. What luck is, and this is from a completely... a skeptic's point of view, luck is getting involved in something in the right moment that you fall within the statistics that makes it seem like it's correct, better luck for you.
Right.
Yep.
But on the long enough time scale, the statistics are going to live up to what they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were betting money on heads or tails on a coin, flipping them, and you win more than you lose, it's just because within that given amount of time. So if you want to call that luck and attribute that some supernatural aspect,
right.
you could. But to me, it's all still statistics.
And like some people who believe in luck, right? If you have too much quote unquote luck, they get like paranoid, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like if a coin flipped 100 times and you mostly got heads, they would freak out. Because statistics tell us it should be 50-50. But it could totally just land on heads the entire time.
It's still 50-50. You just haven't
like
done a big enough sample.
Every time you flip. Like
the Raven paradox.
Right, right. And the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern paradox. Like, how do you know you're in a different world? You only get heads. So.
Right. Well, so, and that's the gambler fallacy or gambler
yep,
paradox.
Believing mm-hmm. that it's going to be different based off of the number. So if luck existed,
yeah.
clearly in a money situation... that would be cheating,
mm-hmm.
and there would have to be also luck precautions taken against it.
Yeah, we would have to give you cannot use your own mats, you cannot use your own dice,
mm-hmm.
you cannot set ahead, you couldn't use your own controllers.
No lucky
like
rabbit's foot.
Video games use, like, their own controllers, right? So, like, when people go to Street Fighter tournaments, they have, like, their specific character board
with,
that's made for that specific character. Like, sometimes they'd either check... to make sure that it wasn't tampered with, or they just tell you you can't use that controller.
Yeah.
You know?
But you'd have to dump those. We wouldn't be able to allow that mm-hmm. if that were. That's obvious.
So clearly tournaments where money's involved, it wouldn't be allowed.
Exactly.
Now, what's the difference between tournaments, though, and role-playing games?
Oh, man. See, I think that's an entirely different animal. So let's go on a break, and when we come back, we'll specifically talk about RPGs.
Hi, I'm Dave Reed. I'm the owner of Time Well Spent Games, and this is Geek Tank.
And we're back. And here's where this gets kind of weird for me, right? So you have a role-playing game, which is statistically supposed to be completely random, right?
Yeah, let's take your Star Trek game as an example.
So, yeah, my Star Trek game. Like, I play the Doctor, right?
Not so, the Doctor Who, Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
So every night I'm rolling, like, whether or not my team survives or dies or people recover, or I'm also, like, I'm also a Beta Zed, so I'm also rolling to get information. I'm kind of a spy.
Yeah, I like the fact that we have our doctor who's the spy.
Because I help my captain get information.
Whereas I'm the Vulcan, and I'm not a spy.
I'm just a straight man. Like, I'm really relying on good rolls, especially in circumstances where these rolls are rare that I have to make them, right?
Right.
So if I were to roll well all the time and get the information we need, and advance the story and make sure that we're making progress in what's already an extremely difficult game, because
it changes the narrative.
You know, I'm changing the narrative, yes, but I'm pushing the narrative. If we're succeeding in our missions, then I'm pushing on to new, bigger, and better things, am I not?
Yeah.
Well, from a story creator's point of view, conflict is important for the story. Mm-hmm. If you're always succeeding at everything put in front of you, you cease to no longer have conflict at a bigger level than that.
But
first
wouldn't
level.
You? Wouldn't that change the storyteller? I mean, wouldn't that change your game master? If only Chelsea's character. Let's say I'm not superstitious, so it doesn't matter, right? So my character, who's the tactical officer, she doesn't actually. We never roll anything. I just roll randomly, and sometimes she succeeds, and sometimes she fails. 50-50. So every time I go out and shoot a bad guy, we get a 50-50 chance that it'll succeed or fail. Now, every time Chelsea's character goes out and tries to gain information, though, it's 100% success rate because she's doing all of her superstitions.
Right.
Now, the game master, Dustin, is going to start changing the narrative, right? But the narrative is going to change in favor of Chelsea's character.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The conflict is no longer there.
But the conflict will still be there for my character.
For the other
right,
characters,
but
probably. But, like, if my character is pushing the narrative and I'm succeeding at everything that I need to do, getting information, making sure my team is well, really.
Well, what it is your character becomes the main character of the story now, and
right.
Guy's a secondary
so
character.
So I'm super ultra your,
she becomes
guy
the Mary
hero,
Sue.
And I've got everybody behind me making some mistakes, but we're still pushing the narrative. So does that really twist the game to a point
that
where
broken.
I have broken
Here's the thing,
it?
Though,
have I broken the game?
I've been in games where someone will not fail a row, but we know that it's fair, so we let it happen. So you'd have to be talking about a situation where because you licked your dice or whatever it was, and every time you do that, you roll the highest, where you roll the success that you're supposed to get.
Right.
Then we would start to suspect, well, maybe something's wrong here. We need to have you stop licking your dice.
Well, my question is, would the GM start to distort the game? For example, let my character start taking the lead.
Because,
I start
well, it
driving
on the GM
the story.
If the GM is going to honor the dice system or not. Because
right?
The GM stops giving her tasks that she rolls for, or he changes
right. Well,
the way she rolls her
she
dice.
She would effectively become a NPC.
See,
because I know she's going to succeed.
Conflicted as well, because you get some role players who, even if they roll horribly, will not role play a situation. Or they will. It's already random because of them. So my dice rolling, I feel like, is also countered by the fact that everybody else is chaotic enough and random enough.
For those who are kind of lost here, in a role-playing game, the purpose of the dice rolls is to allow an option to take a fork in the road.
Right.
And typically, the dice roll statistics will reflect your character. So in your case, being a doctor, you're going to have a better success rate at doing doctor stuff than the Vulcan who's not a doctor.
Correct.
So statistically, that's supposed to be reflected in the dice.
Mm-hmm.
However, let's say Guy's the one who's rolling 20s all the time now, and he's like, well, I'm going to do brain surgery, and he succeeds because he's rolling critical successes all the time. He's now made every other character unnecessary because there's no longer that toolbox of having a team with their each individual thing that they're good at.
I think with each character being so specific, and like Star Trek in particular, like you're the tactical officer guy and the second in command, being the second in command, all of a sudden being able to do everything without Captain Hashimoto, like, It would get weird.
It would.
It would make things weird, but I think we role play situations very well, so I think that would kind of be offset a little bit by all of us wacky role players. Now, this does kind of already happen in games, and that's why I wanted to ask about this, because it's not just about superstitions per se. Like, if all your dreams came true and your dice always rolled well, you know, you're driving as a character, you're the hero, right? You're not really creating conflict in the game, but some other people are. You get this with power gamers who specifically stack their characters so they don't fail specific roles.
Right. Well, and that's part of the question. When I was a kid, mm-hmm. when I was younger, and when I was 14, 15, 16, it was almost embarrassing to fail a role. Now, as a 40-year-old player, I love failing a role because that gives me an opportunity to, I mean, I don't love it more than I like
succeeding
a role.
I'm only laughing because of the situation where I was trying to fail a role on purpose.
Right.
And the odds were greatly against me of succeeding. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to fail this role. There's no way.
Right, and you didn't.
And I critically succeeded it.
Yeah.
And it totally messed up the storyline.
Messed up our entire storyline.
But it was hilarious.
But it was funny. But in a way, that was funny, too. It worked.
Well, I failed my...
But
yeah.
in a way, what I'm trying to say is, you know, when I was a kid, I almost... I mean...
It was a status thing.
It was a status thing. You know, you don't want to fail this role. And it was embarrassing to fail the role.
And for some people, they want to drive the narrative. They just want to get through the session and
I am this,
be the
big
good guy hero and push through, right?
And I won.
But when you think about it, when you think about the narrative of a game, you want it to be random. And that's why you have these bunch of random people in the room. You're getting input from all of them because it's about their characters and how they work together. And also, like, where the maturity's at. Can they play that character? Or are they, like, a little bit hurt themselves? Like, oh, my character died, and I want to bring them back.
Right.
That sucked. Well, too
bad. I think
bad.
A good chunk of responsibility falls on the game master, too.
Right.
Of what they're pushing as what they want
part of
their
the
team to be able to do. The narrative.
Exactly.
Because min-maxing, for me, came about from the, oh, this is a combat-heavy game. There's always going to be at least one combat, if not 20 combats in this game. If you aren't designing your character to do all the tricks that are built inside of the system, then you're not playing it right.
Mm-hmm.
It's
right.
Like, well, you're an archer and you didn't take the so-and-so to give you +3 on your shots. What's wrong with you?
Right.
So that's the game master and the team that sets up that mess.
Then you have somebody like me who will intentionally go, oh, so this is a combat-heavy game. I'm purposely going to take the guy who might be able to use a slingshot if he tried.
Mm-hmm.
And if
but
it's a good
if
game
not,
master,
it's probably going to smack you in the face.
If it's a good storyteller, it'll work because, like Lord of the Rings, how would you compare Bilbo Baggins to Strider or Legolas?
Right.
He's not going to get all the kills.
Bilbo's not going to do anything.
Right.
So it kind of depends on the game you're playing and who you're playing with, right? So are you playing, like, our Star Trek campaign? I love it because it's very story-driven. And I want the story-driven epic with a little bit of statistics here and there. Because that makes it random enough for me to continue. And it's different from real life, right?
And that's what the dice are for, is to
exactly.
give you just a little bit of twist.
Exactly.
Right? You know, you're going to scan this person and try to bring them back to life using a hypo spray. You roll the dice, critical fail.
So
something went wrong.
Exactly. So in the end, even if my superstitions came true, I would honestly be disappointed.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want all that luck. I don't want, like, my dice to roll really well all the time. Like, I hope my dice roll well. But if they don't, it allows me to create a situation where I can improvise and use my skills to figure out where to go next.
So the question really is,
the more, like, story,
why do we still do it?
So I meant Frodo. But in any case, well, here's the thing. If it happens, what would you do? If all of a sudden you could not fail a row?
I would make other people roll for me.
Yeah.
To be honest, I would be like, roll, roll, and I would pick randomly.
I'd go buy a lottery ticket.
Yeah,
well, sure. Anything would bring money, but that's a different story.
At the end of the day, like, I don't play role-playing games to be, like, good guy, hero bringer. I do it to break away from real life, and real life could be good or bad, but, like, in a game specifically playing a different character, I am trying to break myself off completely. So I don't want to be, like, good guy, boring luck bringer, who only rolls real well and bashes all them monsters. I want to be like, because
that's boring.
And you want a good story, and good story has conflicts.
Like my doctor, who like cannot get things straight. She's not a great beta Zed because she didn't grow up with them. So her
Alpha Zeds?
Yes.
Okay.
My telepathic powers are not great because I have no control, and that adds variety. And that's why like I create these characters with these kind of flaws to a point. To make it even more random.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I like the randomness of role-playing. The randomness of card games. And yes, I might get like frustrated or disappointed, but I think it's a sign of maturity when you realize that, like, yeah, I have this superstition that I always do, but it's more of a habit.
It's more of a tradition.
It's a tradition.
Because it doesn't work, you do it. If it did work, you wouldn't do it.
Exactly.
It's part of getting your Mountain Dew and your pizza.
Exactly.
And you know,
and attacking the darkness.
It's part of the traditions of having a role-playing game. We sit down with our buddies and, like, I draw with every game that I try to do. I draw my character or I'll draw... You know, that's just what I do in a game.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing, I expect nothing out of it.
Right.
For me, the failing makes the succeeding that much better.
Yes.
And yeah. When the statistics are against you, it makes it even better. An example was, Guy and I were playing in a game where the game master enforced the rule that if you come in late, if you join months later, you have to start at level 1, even though everybody else is level 5.
Ooh.
So I sucked as a character compared to the group.
Yep.
So the one time I like leap in to save another character and succeed in my row, which is like an impossible row, it made that moment that much more cinematic.
Right. Because your character shouldn't have been able to do that.
Yeah.
It's kind of funky because like I play a lot of Pathfinder and I play a lot of the Star Trek game, right? But I started getting into Savage Worlds. And in Savage Worlds, you have to take positive things, but you also have to take negatives. And it adds to the richness of your character. And it just makes it so much more fun. So the randomness in gaming, like, we love it. But we all have our own kind of habits that say, this is game time. Here are my dice, or here are my cards. Here's my special satchel where I put, like, all my lucky game pieces.
Right.
Or, like, I just have to have my Mountain Dew before I play a game because it sets you in the mindset that I'm here and I'm ready to game and I'm ready to have a good time.
So the answer to the question is?
Yes. It would be cheating.
It would.
But we don't do it because of the cheating.
We don't play to win.
We don't play to win.
You're not playing to win. You're playing to play. Play the game.
Yep.
Have the experience. Exactly.
It's part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So... it's time for our Awa after all of that, so here we go.
Okay, it's time for our Ask Us Anything segment, and our question comes from you guys, our listener base. Woo-hoo! And the question is, what series or movie would you want to rewrite to make it better? I'll pass this one to Chelsea.
Oh, you're going to give it to me first?
Yep.
Because I'm a horrible person because I love the movie Labyrinth, but I wouldn't mind the villain winning. It defeats parts of the movies, but there's this whole, like, awful thing about women just being hopelessly in love with somebody and they can do no wrong and then finding the inner strength to be like, you don't have any power over me. And it's super cliched and I really don't like it, to be honest. because even though her journey is good, there could be a little more progression, and there could be like the villain winning at first and then her having to overcome that. And I think that would make a little bit more of an interesting story. And there's a really good fan theory out there as well that Jareth lost his Sarah, so he keeps pulling Sarahs into the labyrinth.
Oh.
So when she says, "My name is Sarah," Hoggle says, "Of course you are. Of course you're Sarah. You're all Sarah. They're all Sarah." So a friend of mine, Joe, shout out, said that to me this week, and that just has been on my mind. So that's what I would rewrite.
Gotcha.
Well, the one I'd like to rewrite would hopefully make it exist, because they only made the pilot, and the pilot failed.
Oh.
So I got to back up a little bit. There's a book series I really like called The Destroyer, also known as Rimmel Williams. So the book series was written by Warren Murphy and Richard Sapir back in 1971, although they wrote the manuscript in 1963, but I couldn't find out why they waited so long to do it. What's interesting is they each write parts of the book totally separately. So they don't collaborate on it. It's just one person writes one part, and the next person, you know, reads it, then they write the next part.
Oh, my gosh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And I imagine it cuts down on arguments.
Yeah.
So there was a movie of it made with Fred Ward, Joe Gray, Wilford Brimley, and Kate McGraw, which is an interesting connection.
McGrew,
thank you. I knew I was saying it wrong.
So that'd be Catherine Janeway.
Yeah, exactly. Which I'll get to another Star Trek connection, too, after this.
And, gotta love the Star Trek connections to everywhere.
It is. The movie was good. It was fine. And then they tried to make a TV series. The movie was directed by Guy Hamilton, who did some James Bond films, too.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
So they did a TV series that failed horribly. It was the plot. They made a TV pilot, hoping people would like it, and then it would turn into a thing. But here's the thing. The plot of it is about an assassin.
Assassin?
Kills people. And in the books, there's lots of sort of graphic sex and very graphic violence.
Okay.
This was back in the 80s. In fact, it was 1988 is when the pilot hit. They had to water it down a ton, and they had to put in almost 80s sitcom stuff in it to make it funny.
Really?
It sucked. So what the TV series had Rowdy McDowell as Chuun.
Right.
And who was in Star Trek, Rowdy McDowell played the villain.
You mean Malcolm McDowell?
Oh, I got my McDowells mixed up, didn't I?
Malcolm McDowell was in Generations.
Is he Roddy McDowell's son?
Probably.
I can't remember. All right, anyway.
He was the villain in Generations.
I would rewrite that, because I want it to work as a TV series, and I think it would work so much better now in this year, because people can look at stuff at, like, Preacher and Walking Dead. There's tons of gore. Game of Thrones.
Well, you had to get through RoboCop. RoboCop was, like, the most gory film of its time in the 80s, and so when it did come out, like, people were shocked, and now it's, like, a classic, because we range our gore and violence from there, and it's gotten a bit real.
So if Netflix existed when they tried to do this, it would have worked, I think.
Okay.
Right.
I stumbled across Rimmel Williams 2, which is a fan-made trailer. It sucks so bad. Do not look it up. I'm saving you the trouble.
You just said, don't mention the trailer then.
I mentioned it because someone might look up, I wonder if they're going to do a thing, and they might. I'm trying to save them that problem.
Oh, okay.
Save them the pain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What would you remake, Guy?
Babylon 5. So, I am a major, major fan of Babylon 5, but it was the first series that had CG spaceships, and now looking back on it, it is way dated, and they canceled it at the end of the fourth season, and then said, oh, never mind, we uncanceled it, and so the fifth season is a complete disaster area.
So wait, is that when Fox was born, because it was canceled and then uncanceled?
I guess. Well, it was definitely on Fox, and that's actually part of what Fox got all of its reputation for.
Was this around the writer's strike, or this was before the writer's strike, wasn't it?
There were writer's strikes during it.
That's why they canceled?
Oh, no.
That happened to Heroes.
Why.
Yeah, that wasn't part of the why.
Okay.
What happened was Babylon 5 went four seasons, and then in the fourth season they said, you know, you're not getting enough ratings, so we're canceling you. We're nice to you guys, so we're going to let you guys write your season out. So they wrapped all of the threads of Babylon 5 up to the end of fourth season. And then everybody started to really like it because it was a great show. So they're like, never mind, we're not canceling you. Get back in there and write a fifth season. So the fifth season makes no sense. And so then they were like, this show sucks. So they canceled it.
Oh, no. Well,
but it was supposed
Babylon
to go five. It was supposed to go five seasons. Because it was Babylon 5. It was supposed to go five seasons. And then so instead it went four seasons effectively and then got wrapped up. I think if I were to redo anything, I would want to redo Babylon 5 and try to get it back to its original, like the heartbeat of J. Michael Straczynski.
Write an extra season to put between them so that way the wrap-up works.
So that everything wraps where it's supposed to wrap at the end of the Shadow War.
Instead of having someone wake up in bed and go, oh, that wrap-up was all a dream.
Yeah, you know, let's all start all over again.
Don't
or whatever.
Do the dream thing, Christ.
Right. So if you have any ask us anythings, anything you want to send to us, you can email us at questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com.
Thank you so much for joining us this episode. Next one, we have a pretty tough question to ask.
Next episode is going to come out on September 10th, which is also World Suicide Prevention Day.
So we're going to ask the question, why is mental illness not treated like a real disease? Next week on Geek Tank.
As always, you can email us at questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. We're Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. Feel free to join the conversation. We look forward to hearing from you.
Geek Tank is a production of Fox Blade Media and is protected under the Creative Commons 3.0 license. Your hosts today were Guy S. Davis, C. Troy Fuller, and Chelsea Kramer. Kevin Weibler is our engineer, and our music was composed by David Coyle. Geek Tank is funded by listeners like you. Please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/foxblade. I'm Mike Davis, and I'd like all of you to make it so. Good night.